We're going to learn Daf Nun Vav, Masechtas Ketubos. We're going to start from the fourth line from the top. Just as a quick reminder, the Gemara beforehand brought Shitas Rebbe Eliezer in our Mishnah, which the Mishnah was on Daf Nun Dalet Amud Beis, about in a situation where the husband or the chosen promises extra money in the Ketubos. So of course we have the base amount, which is 200 for a Basula, 100 for an Almana. And then the Chassan decides to add to that. So we saw that he's allowed to. And the Tana comes along, Rabbi Lozer Ben Azariah, and he says that that Chiv, even if he writes the Ksuba during the Erisin, while they're only engaged, the Chiv to pay the extra only kicks in when if they actually get married. Okay, so that's the basis for which this Gemara now continues. The Gemara, we want to discuss what would be the logic, but now let's jump into the Gemara. So what do we do? Lamaisa. So the Gemara says, very interesting. Yosef Rabbi Chanino, Kamei de Rabbi Yanai. So Rabbi Chanino was sitting in front of Rabbi Yanai, the Gemara, and he says, Halocha, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we pass him that way. Again, the relevance over here is only with respect to the extra. The base ksuba, once you're engaged, you're chayv. The chiddush is that we pass him like Rabbi Elazar, that since he only really wrote those extra amounts for the sake of getting married, if he didn't get married, he never meant to obligate himself, even though he wrote it, he never meant to obligate himself before they get married, and that's the way Rabbi Chanina paskins like Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Amar lei. So remember, Rabbi Chanina said this to Rabbi Yanai. So Rabbi Yanai answered him, Poik kari lekarech, go out and say what you just said, lebra, to the outside, to the world, but tell them, ain halachah k'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. We don't paskin that way. I mean, it's the guy was mechayev himself, and you agreed to pay, so he agreed to pay. He's chayev. Amar Rabbi Yisroel bar Abdimi mishum rabenu. So he says, halachah k'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Again, he paskins like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Amar Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel halachah k'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So Rav Nachman quotes Shmuel to say, now both Shmuel and Rav Nachman are big poskim, as we know, we've heard their names quite a lot in Shas. They paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, meaning that the obligation does not really kick in yet. However, Rav Nachman didei Omar ein halachah k'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. But when he quotes it himself, Rabbi Nachman himself held not like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. But the Gemara then flips and says, "V'nahardoi mishmei de Rav Nachman." The Nahardoi would quote Rav Nachman, and they would say, "Amri halacha Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah." And they obviously had a kabbalah that Rav Nachman would say the halacha is like a Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And they would say the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The afagav de lot Rav Nachman, even though Rav Nachman would give a curse, if you want to, or punish the Omar, and he would say, "Kol b'ayna d'doin ki Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah." Anybody who paskins like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, hochi b'hochi d'have, this and this should happen to him, right? So, in other words, he obviously was not friendly with this idea of this notion of paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Afilo hochi halacha ki Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So, at the same time, he would say, whoever paskins like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah needs to be cursed, needs to be punished. However, we still do paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And in fact, since there's a lot of back and forth, it's even not clear what Rav Nachman himself, who was a big poskik, but he was a dayan and a poskik, what he held. So the Gemara itself gives us a conclusion. It says, "V'halacha l'maiso." So what do we do? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. We paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Okay, so what does that mean to put it in perspective? It's all back and forth. We paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but what does that mean in reality? What that means is, again, just to not so that it's not just words, so that it means something, that means that even if the chosen promises extra money to the kala in a written ksuba before they get married, and for whatever reason they end up not getting married, doesn't matter why, they do not get married, he is not chayev that extra amount. Again, the base amount, the 200 zuz, the 100 zuz, that he is chayev, because that's a tanai bez, and that happens automatically by engagement. The extra was only intended for the sake if they get married. Alright, now the Gemara is going to get into a little bit more specific. What does that mean that I got married? Now we have to confirm, what does it mean that they got married? What is the trigger exactly that this new chiyuv of the extra ksuba kicks in? So, the Gemara continues, "Boi rabin nichnasa l'chupa v'loi nivala ma." What happens if they had the chupa, but they didn't, what we refer to as they haven't consummated the marriage. There was no biya. So they had the chupa, which is technically getting married, but they didn't have the living together part. So, Now, chibas chuppa koina, is it just the excitement of the chuppa itself that now that they're together, is that enough to be considered married and the chiv kicks in? Or chibas bia koina? Or, as we would understand literally, is it because of the, that's what he's really waiting for? That's what the chasen is waiting for. So until the bia happens, nothing, even though they're technically on paper and halachically married, but they never really were together yet, so maybe the ksuba doesn't kick in. So, toshima, bring your raya. The Tani Rav Yosef, Shaloi Kosev Lo Ella Al Chibas Laila Harishon. So Rav Yosef, the way he quotes it is because of the attachment that happens on the first night. Now, that's also not really clear, so we have to define it. I Amar Pishloim Chibas Chuppa Koina. So if the first night means because of the fact that they got married, there was a chuppa, Hanu Da Omer Laila Harishon. So then I understand what the first night, that's what the first night is about, the night that they get married. So all you need is the chuppah, according to that explanation. Eli'i amr chibas bia koina. But if you understood all along that there has to actually be the bia, so bilo b'layla harishon isa mikan ve'elech lesa, so then why would you talk about the layla harishon? It's not the layla harishon that's really the point. It's the point that they do something that husband them with their marital relations. That's really what we're interested in. So it has nothing to do with the layla harishon per se. It's doing whatever, it doesn't have to be on the first night, it could be on the second night, it could be on the third night for whatever reason. So the chuppah obviously only happens once. And the chuppah has to happen when it happens, and until it happens, nothing happened. So but the bia could theoretically happen for many reasons, who knows what the circumstances are, could happen on a different night. So why would you refer to the Laila HaRishon unless you specifically mean the chuppah, which has to happen on the first night? So it seems like, according to this explanation, that, I guess, Rabbi Yosef held, Laila HaRishon means the chuppah. So chuppah is enough to be mechayev him. Okay, so 1 second. So that's an easy explanation. Problem is, Vala my chuppah, so fine, you want to say it means the chuppah. So you're telling me chuppah b'layla isa b'yamam alesa? Because we talk about Laila HaRishon, we've been very focused on the Rishon part of it. But why do we even have to talk about Laila? Just say Rishon, the first, at the beginning. So why does it have to be at night? A chuppah could theoretically, and as we know, we all experience that we've gone to chuppahs that are during the day. A chuppah could be during the day. Why does it say night? Ula taimech. Okay, so what? So if you don't want to use the word chuppah attached to the word laila, so ula taimech, according to that same logic, bia b'layla isa b'yamam alesa, you're going to tell me that there's no such thing as, that you want to say laila harisha and must be referring to the bia. What is the connection between bia and laila? Ha'amar rava. Im haya b'bayis offal, if you're in a very dark house, mutter. It's mutter even to do bia during the day. It just has to be a night circumstance. It doesn't have to be at night per se. So why does the, if you're being medayik every word that Rabbi Yosef said, and he says halayla arishain, what is the word layla, what's the relevance of the word layla? So the Gemara says, that doesn't bother me. Halay kasha, that's not so difficult. Oirich ara kamashmar, that's the normal thing to be a b'layla. It's true that it's possible to do bia during the day, but it's the normal way of the world is that the bia is at night, so we can say laila when we're referring to bia. Ela chuppah kasha, but we're still left with the original kasha. What is the chuppah? Why would we say chuppah has to be at night? Because that clearly could go either way. That's a matter of convenience, right? As we know, during the summer, when shki is very late, chuppahs are during the day all the time, because, you know, shki is very late. So, the Gemara says, chuppah nami loy kasha. That also doesn't bother me that we refer to the chuppah at night. Kiven de stam chuppah labia kaimu. Since again, we all know that the reason of the chuppah, the purpose of the chuppah is to get to that night. That also we refer to it at night. So even though the chuppah itself, the actual chuppah, I'm not defining the word chuppah here, but let's say the definition of chuppah is standing under the chuppah, right? Standing under the canopy. So even if that happens during the day, it's still the happening during the day is for the sake of what's going to happen at night. So we can refer to it, and in terms of reference, we can reference it at night, even if the act itself happens during the day. So that's not difficult. So it comes out, it's not really clear 100%, because you could say like this, you could say like that. It could mean either way. But the Gemara seems to be leaning in the direction that it does mean chuppah, because the chuppah fits in better with what Rabbi Yosef says. Again, it's not forced, it's not absolute that's what Rabbi Yosef said, but it fits in better with what Rabbi Yosef said when he refers to Laila Rishon, that is going to occur that is, the chuppah is always going to happen on the first night. Again, even if it's not exactly at night, but it's for the sake of at night. So it fits in better to say Laila Rishon is referring to chuppah. And if that's pshat in Rabbi Yosef, then that's the answer to our question. The question was, at what point does the extra ksuba kick in? The chiyuv of the extra ksuba kick in? The answer would then be from the chuppah, even if it doesn't result in a bia for whatever reason. Okay. So that's one way to look at the Gemara. So we see that it's the chuppah for the sake of the bia. However, now the Gemara asks the following. Boi Rav Ashi, what about the following scenario? Boi Rav Ashi, nichnas al chuppah pirsan nida mahu. So the way we learn, according to most Rishonim, is that we're talking about this as a continuation of the Gemara, and say, fine, no problem. So you need a chuppah. But what happens if you have a chuppah that the chuppah itself is lacking? The chuppah itself is the type of chuppah that does not come with an automatic bia, because she's a nida. So, imtim salam rechibas chuppah koino. So even if you want to say that it's the chuppah itself, you see how the Gemara says imtim salam, the Gemara doesn't say it's the final absolute. But even if you want to say that it is the chuppah is enough, chuppah dechazil a bia, does the chuppah itself have to be, because the purpose of the chuppah is to get to the bia. So does the chuppah itself have to be a valid, not valid isn't halachically valid, but a valid for the purposes of bia? Is it, you know, does it have to be a chuppah that'll get you to the bia? It's gets you to the biyah. But a chuppah that can't get you to the biyah is not enough, is not the type of chuppah that we're talking about. It's not the, so to speak, the exciting type of chuppah. Or maybe chuppah is chuppah. Chuppah, again, if all I care about is the fact that we got married, we're married. I can now call you my wife. I can now call you my husband. So that's all, that's the exciting part, that we got married. So maybe it doesn't matter whether or not there's even, forget about whether you actually had the bia. It doesn't even have to be royal for the bia. And that would be enough. To which the Gemara says, take. On that specific point, the Gemara says, take. We don't really know. Right? The Gemara now quotes the next part of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a right to cause of the Basur. So now we have an interesting Shitas Rabbi Yehuda again. This is just a quote from the Mishnah that we saw already. That the Mishnah says, that Rabbi Yehuda says that even though we know that a ksuba for, let's say, a basula has to be 200, but the girl could write back a shtar that says, Siskabalti, it's as if I already received 100 of the ksuba, so that it reduces his actual payment. So the Gemara now continues. V'savar Rabbi Yehuda, the koisvin shover, does Rabbi Yehuda hold of the concept of writing a shover? So shover just means simply a receipt. And let's talk in the regular world. Where would you write a receipt? In the normal world, you would say, I owe you $100. If I paid you 50, you would write me a receipt that you paid 50, and then I hold on to that receipt as evidence of the fact that I already paid the 50. But then it becomes an obligation on me to hold on to that shtar to prove that I already paid the 50. Okay? So this is a machlokes, whether or not we can require that the borrower hold on to a receipt. Can we trust the borrower, or are we worried that the borrower, for whatever reason, may lose the receipt? So, Gemara here starts with saying that, and this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in our Mishnah, is that you do write the shaver, that at least because remember, he's like a borrower. He's saying, I owe you 200 zuz. And she's like the lender saying, I received 100. So, and that would mean that the husband then have to, as similar to a borrower, would have to write, hold on to that receipt. Okay, so the Gemara says, and this is all Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, and it seems like we do approve of the concept of a shover, v'hotnan, but we have a Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who objects to this whole concept. We have like this, Mishapar Mixas Choyvoy, again, this is our classic example, somebody who paid back part of his loan, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Yachlif, Rabbi Yehuda says, well, in that case, you have to write a new contract. You have to write a new promissory note that says, instead of owing 100, I now owe 50, because I paid back 50, so I don't owe you the 100 anymore. So that original note is no longer valid. I have to write a brand new note. Yachlip, I have to switch it out. So I don't write a shaver. Rabbi Yosef, Oimer, Yichtoiv loy shaver. Rabbi Yosef said, no. It's better to write a shaver. Now what's the very simple machlekes over here, as Rashi explains? The difference is, remember, on the one hand, if you write a shaver, that means it's now the loiva, the borrower's responsibility to hold on to this extra contract, this receipt that he may or may not lose. On the other hand, if you don't write a shoiva and you rewrite a new shtar, every shtar you write, every contract has a date on it. So if originally I borrowed the money last year and I paid back half and now I'm going to write a new contract now, it's going to be dated now. So I'm going to lose a whole year worth of priority, worth of mishubadim. So if I have, otherwise I'd be first in time, in if you want to understand it from a land concept, right? Whoever records first has priority over anything that's recorded afterwards. So if I write a new contract, what we call in our world, we call this a novation. If it's a novation, that means it starts over again, and anything that happened beforehand is irrelevant. So even though you promised collateral from a year ago, it's no longer relevant if you switch and write a new contract, which is only dated now. That's the explanation of the machlekes over here. It's not just a question of do you write a shaver or not. It's not just that simple. It's also a question of requiring a new contract loses out in some of the priority. Anyway, but for our purposes, this is a contradiction in Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. Here in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says you do write a receipt. And there in the case of the loan, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, do not write a receipt. So how do we answer this contradiction? So Rabbi Yehuda has a very simple answer. Here is a little different, because since this is all happening at the same time, she'll write the fact that she received part of the payment into the ksuba itself. In fact, the Mefarshim explained that what's going to happen is the Edim that sign on the ksuba are going to sign below where she writes, I received. In other words, you're going to say, I owe you 200. Then she writes, I received 100. And then the Edim are going to sign. So it's all going to happen. So there's no such thing as an extra contract to worry about whether he's going to lose it or not. It's all there within one contract. So it's not a problem, as opposed to a regular loan where I borrow the money on Monday, I don't pay back till Tuesday. So it's a different contract. That's the first teretz. Abaya Omar, afilu teima b'shein shei brosa mitaycha. You could even say over here is different even if you're not going to write it within the ksuba itself. Because there's a major difference between this case and a regular loan. Vishlema hosam. Over there in the case of the loan, vadai para. There's no question that he already paid back a good portion of that loan. He actually paid. And dilma mirkos tavrosa, maybe he will lose his or misplace his receipt. Umapagle lishtara, and the lender is going to pull out the full contract. V'hodagove simna achrina, and he's going to end up collecting a second time. Because again, the contract has the full amount, and he says, here's the contract. And you have nothing to dissuade it. So it's going to be the full amount. He's going to end up paying twice. Hacha versus our situation in the case of Ksuba. Vada yavla milso. Vada yavla. Did he actually give her part of the ksuba? Of course not. Milsaba almahuda amrale. It's just that she was being nice to him. She said, yeah, you gave it to me. But in reality, she didn't. So what's the worst case scenario? Initra, if he watches the contract, good, he's protected. Viloi nitra, and if he doesn't watch it, iudavsed anafshe, so he lost it himself. It's his. Ihu daavsed anafshe. He lost the fact that he's going to have to pay the full ksuba. It's his loss. It's his loss. He could have protected himself, and it's not so terrible. Worst case scenario, he pays. He really was supposed to pay the full amount anyway. So it's his own loss by the fact that he didn't protect himself and find a way out of paying half the ksuba. So there's a very big difference as opposed to a regular shtar where you'd be bechayiv, you'd be taking it begezel, because the guy really did pay. The guy really did pay, and you're collecting from him a second time because he doesn't have evidence against you. And Bezin's going to be forced to take the money from him, even though it's really, really not the lender's money. He's taking from him a second time. So there's much more of an issue of protecting the borrower. Over here, worst case scenario, so he pays what he was supposed to pay anyway. So it's not such a big deal. Fine. So that's Abayas. And that's why Abayas says it's not a contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda. For the most part, Rabbi Yehuda holds we don't write a shaver. But over here, we could, because worst case scenario, if he pays the full amount, it's not so terrible. Okay, now, so we have a machlekes Abaya and Rav Yirmiyah, whether or not we write the shaver b'seichel in the ksuba itself. So bishlam Abaya lo yomek Rav Yirmiyah. I understand why Abaya doesn't like Rav Yirmiyah's teretz, where she's going to write it within the same contract. Lo yikadani shavrasa mitoichel, because it doesn't say anywhere that Rav Yehuda never introduced this concept that becomes the definition of how you write the ksuba with the shaver with it. Ella Rav Yirmiyah, my time lo yomek Abaya. So why doesn't Rabbi Yirmiyah like Abaye's teretz? It's a very nice teretz that over here is a little bit, it's a different scenario. So he answers, the Rabbi Yirmiyah would answer, Gezeira Shoiver da Hacha Otto Shoiver da Alma. Over here, you're right. There is really nothing wrong with allowing for, even according to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, to allow for a Shoiver in this scenario. However, since as a general rule, we do not allow Shoivers, we're not going to allow this one either, because we have to make sure we don't get confused and end up making exceptions to the rule, because then the whole rule is not going to hold up. So we have to make it's a funny lashon to call this a gezeira, because it's not really by mominus, we don't usually have gezeiras. Gezeira is usually a iser v'heter type of concept. But over here, we're gonna, but it's at least a lashon mushal. Which is means we're using that same kind of expression that we don't want to make an exception to the rule, because once you start making exceptions to the rule, the whole rule is going to fall apart. And since we want the rule, according to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, that we don't write a shaver, so we're not going to allow a shaver. This is the way Rabbi Yirmiyah at least sees the world. So we're not going to allow a shaver in this case either. Okay. So that's the bottom line. This is all in Shitas, but the bottom line is according to Rabbi Yehuda. However, you're going to get there, but Rabbi Yehuda does allow for a half payment of, or the equivalent of a receipt for the ksuba. Now the Gemara is going to focus on a different point. Taima de kos filet. All of this is true because she actually writes a written contract that she received payment. Avalal pe loy. But if she just says it, and she just says that it's as if I received it, she verbally says it, that's not going to work. Amai. Why not? And the answer is, the Gemara says, Davrshav b'momen hu, because this is a monetary issue. V'shamini lei the Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda, remember, this is all in Shitas Rabbi Yehuda that we're being medayik. Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Davrshav b'momen tanai kayim. The Rabbi Yehuda holds that when dealing with a tanai, that it is going to, the tanai is going to work. So therefore, it would work, right, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, so this is actually the question. So the Gemara's question is the other way around. The other question is, so why was it necessary? I understand you want to call it a tanai. I understand we want to call it a tanai. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, this tanai would work. And since we are explaining Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, we should allow even a verbal agreement. Because even if the verbal agreement constitutes a tanai, Shitas Rabbi Yehuda is by mominus, tanai works. So why would you have a problem with this? So why is it, so this is really the Gemara's question, of why is it that we limited it to a written contract? We should have been able to handle this even if it was just verbal and considered a tanai. D'tanya. Titania, we learned in a brisa. This is the classic example where a guy says, I want to get married on condition that I don't have to provide you the basic obligations of Sherek Sos Va'ino, as we defined earlier in the Masechta, what Sherek Sos Va'ino, the obligations to provide food, the food and clothing, and spending time with you. So the halacha is, Harezu Mekadeshes, V'tanai Batal. Divrei Remeir. Remeir says that the Tanai is Batal, it's as if he never made that condition in the first place, because this is a classic Masna Mashikos of a Torah. Since the Torah itself requires that you provide these things to your wife, you can't go ahead and start making conditions against what the Torah says, so we're just going to ignore your conditions. However, let's focus on Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, B'davar Sheba Moment, Tanai Kayim. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, I don't care. If you decide that if she agrees to get married with the understanding that he's not going to support her, then fine. That's their own agreement. That's their own monetary obligation that she's waiving. So it should work. Oh, so which this all brings us back to the original question. So we see that Shitas Rabbi Yehuda is that you could make a tanai even against the Masna Mashikos Batari, even on a Davar Sheba Momen. When you're talking about a Davar Sheba Momen, even against the Masna Mashikos Batari. So if so, according to Rabbi Yehuda, should be okay with the concept of making a tanai that she already received part of her ksuba. So why does Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah limit it to a written contract when he could have allowed it even as a verbal contract, even as a verbal agreement, which would be considered a Tanai? But according to Rabbi Yehuda, this kind of Tanai should not be a problem. So the Gemara says, Kesavah Rabbi Yehuda Ksuba de Rabbanon. This is interesting. So Rabbi Yehuda Shita is arguing on Reb Meir, okay, which is important, an important note to make, that this is Rabbi Yehuda arguing on Reb Meir, and he holds Ksuba de Rabbanon. So why is that relevant? The Chachamim also Chizik LeDevrayim Yoyser Mishal Taira. The Chachamim decided to add extra special types of takanos and extra special rules, but it's a derabanan. We want to uphold the rule derabanan more than even what the Torah would say. So it's true that even so midarai, so you can make this tonight because it's only its condition that affects money, so I don't care. However, since this is a derabanan, the derabanan want to protect their rules to the ultimate. Even if you could theoretically, but the Rabbanan aren't going to allow you to make any Tanai. So this Tanai is not going to work. And the only way it will work, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is if you have a written contract. So it's not a condition anymore. Now it's a written agreement that you have to uphold because of the written agreement. So the Gemara's real focus right now is the fact that we're okay with a Tanai generally. It's just because it happens to be this scenario is the Rabbanan, so we have extra special rules and protections. Okay, so we're going to focus on the derabanan aspect of it right now. So the Gemara continues, Harei peiros derabanan, v'loy avdu rabanan chizuk. We have other cases, which we'll explain in a second, which are also derabanan, and over there, for whatever reason, all of a sudden rabanan are not worked up and make extra protections to protect their gzeira derabanan, or their rule derabanan. What's an example? So you see that it's not always true that just because something is derabanan, that therefore automatically it gets extra protection. What's the case over there? It's not. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, La'olam hu oichol peiroi peirois. The husband gets to, now as we know, as again the general rule is, that when a wife brings something into the marriage, something useful into the marriage, the husband has to, if the marriage ends, the husband has to return the object itself. Let's just use an example. Let's just say an apartment building. So she brings an apartment building into the marriage. So if the marriage were to end, that's her apartment building. She gets the apartment building back. But while they're married, that apartment building is rented out to tenants. The husband gets the produce from the apartment building. Now, the husband could say to her, hello, I don't want your payers, it's your building, you keep it, you know, like some marriages, they have separate bank accounts, you keep the building, it's yours, I don't want anything. But if he wrote to her the words, I don't want the payers, that only means the direct income. Let's say, so what does that mean? Let's say, just for a simple scenario, the rent is $1,000, then she takes that $1,000 and she buys another building. Now that other building now, at this point, is now not the payers anymore. Or actually, maybe the building is, and that other building also produces income. So she has building A that she came into the marriage with. She made $1,000, and with $1,000 she bought a different building. And that second building is what we call payers. It's the produce of the produce. It's what comes about as a result of just the payers. So if the husband were to say to the wife, I don't want your payers, we're very specific and we say, I only don't want the direct derivation. I only don't want directly what comes from your item, your property. So therefore, the Rabbi Yehuda says, now you'll understand the quote that the Gemara is quoting over here at the time. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, La'olam hu oichol peiroi peirois. You could get the fruit of the fruit, even if you didn't allow yourself to get the fruit. You can get the fruit of the fruit. Ad sheyichtav lo din v'dvarim ein li b'nechseich u b'peirois ein ad oilom. You have to write the whole thing. You have to write all these words. I don't want any din v'dvarim. I don't want anything to do with your property, your peirois, and the peirois forever. Then you've now excluded everything. Because now you said, I don't want the property, I don't want the payers, and I don't want the pay repairs, and I don't want anything. Ad oilum then includes, any derivation even further beyond that. But we see over here, it's possible that the husband could make himself not responsible or not not responsible and not eligible to benefit from any part of her payers. Okay, that's the special halacha that has to do. We'll see later in the Masechta. We'll deal with this. Okay, this is where is this? This is on Daf Pei Gimel. Okay, we'll get there, Meretz Hashem. Okay, V'kayma lon. Now, on the top of Nun Vov Amabez. So, what is the relevance? V'kayma lon, my koisid. Now, it happens to be over there. We also have the words koisid because it says you write the words din v'dvarim. However, it's a long sugi over there. But the Gemara ultimately over there on Daf Pei Gimel says my koisid. What are the words that he writes mean? Oimer. So, even though the Mishnah uses the word koisiv, it does not mean literally, you don't have to write this. You could even say it. Okay. Which, remember, this is the whole focus of what we're talking about over here. We made a huge distinction in our Gemara, right, in our Mishnah, between writing, I got it, versus saying, I got it. And there, that's a case where you said it. Even though the words of the Mishnah are the word koisiv, but we define, and we know, again, it's not our sugi here, let's just accept the fact that the maskana of the Gemara over there says the word koisid means oimer, and over there it says the word oimer, and the condition works. Now, I don't understand. This whole business that the husband gets the pay raise is all a din derabbanan. And over there, he could verbally say, I don't want it. And that verbal is considered a tanai. And the tanai works. And we don't say, oh, it's a dirabbanan and we should make extra chizik and it shouldn't work, blah, blah, blah. We don't make that same kind of comment that we make over here. It's the same dirabbanan. Over here, a verbal is a problem. And over there in Parakah Kaysev, verbal is not a problem. So what is it? So Amar Abayah says, no, there is a difference. So it's true that we have this rule, but you have to also know the nuances to the rule. Amar Abayah, l'kol yesh ksuba. The difference is very, there's a major difference. Every marriage has a ksuba. There is no exception to the rule. V'loy l'kol yesh peiros. But not every marriage has a wife bringing in some income-producing object. That's maybe less usual, less common. And therefore, milsa d'shchicha of the Rabbanan chizik, the Rabbanan actually solidified and made it more concrete those things that are shchiach, that happen commonly. Milso the loy shchicha loy of the Rabbanan chizik. Those things that are not common, the Rabbanan didn't feel the need to strengthen their takana or gzeir, whatever you want to call it. So the Gemara over here is saying, you're right. Generally, the rule is still true that the Rabbanan do make chizik, that make their rules very, very strong. However, that concept of taking their Rabbanan and making it stronger than it really deserves to be, even more strengthened, is only when you're talking about something that's very common. When something's not so common, did the Rabbanan say, whatever the rule is, that's fine. Whatever the rule, we can keep the rule. We don't have to overdo and strengthen the rule. Okay, fine. I can accept that distinction. However, I'll give you another example of another Rabbanan. Hare chamar d'shchichi. I'm going to bring you an example. So before you even ask me, I'm going to tell you that this is a common practice. So, if it's a common practice, that means it falls into the category of where the Rabbanan should be strengthening it, right, should be chizuk, then over there, loy of the Rabbanan chizuk, and over there the Rabbanan did not add extra rules and make it stronger. Okay. What's the case? The Tanan. So first I have to tell you the case before we can give an answer. So what's the case? The Tanan we learned in the Mishnah. Chamer and shenichna sula'ir. You have two, literally translated means donkey drivers, that came into the city. Now, of course, the point of the donkey driver is not the donkey. The point of the donkey driver is, the goods, that is the produce that they are selling. The two guys come into the city at the same time, V'omar echad mehen, and one of them says to, they go to the marketplace, and he says, Shali chadosh, mine is the new crop, which Rashi explains means is not as valuable, V'shal chaveri yoshon, but my friend's is older, which is dried out, which is better, which is, which is seasoned. So, Shali, and then he adds on, Shali Eina Mesukin, and then he says, also, in mine, I didn't take Trumas and Rises. Mishal Chaver Mesukin, and my friend, the other guy, the other vendor, his already ready to go. They're ready for sale, ready for use. So, it sounds like he's pushing that his friend's produce is much better than his. And since he's not talking about himself, he's talking about his friend, it sounds very believable because he's talking about his friend. halacha is, or at least the Tanakhama Shita is, Einin Emanim, we don't trust them. We don't believe them. We don't believe them because we know that this is a game that they're playing. What they do is they come in and they pretend they don't know each other, and I push the other guy's product to look like it's better than mine, and he sells out. Then we go to another city and he pushes my product and I sell out. So we have this back and forth, with good cop, bad cop type of thing, where we play a game psychologically on the customers to make it look like I have the right product. So that's why the Tanakhama Shita is that you're not Neman. Now, Rashi adds on something very important, though. When we talk about Chodosh and Yashon, even though naturally we would talk about Chodosh, we would think that Chodosh means the Isser and Heter of Chodosh and the Omer. Rashi says that Rashi Shita, at least I know the other Rishonim argue, but Rashi Shita is that we're not actually talking about halachic Chodosh and Yashon. We're talking about physical Chodosh and Yashon because. Right, it's what's a better product versus the issue is still about what Shumas and Meisers he took. So according to Rashi, the Chodosh and the Yoshin is just a setup so that you can get the Shumas and Meisers, whether we believe them, whether they took Shumas and Meisers or not. That's the way Rashi learns. Because we'll see later in the Gemara is only going to talk about Demai, which is only a Demai is only a Trumas and Meisters issue. It has nothing to do with Chodosh. So therefore Rashi understood that the Gemara can't possibly be talking about real Isser Chodosh. Okay, but let's get to the next Shita, which is what we have to focus on. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer Nemanim. Rabbi Yehuda says we believe them. Oh, now one second. This is a sugya of Demai. This is a sugya of an Amma Oretz who comes into town. We don't know who he is and whether or not we can trust him, whether he took Shumas and Meisers, and Rabbi Yehuda says we can believe them. Now, I don't understand. And now, if you hold according to Rabbi Yehuda Shita, and that by a dover that's Shchiach, which we already established, this is Shchiach, this happens all the time. Every day people are coming into the market and playing this game. So, and Rabbi Yehuda says we believe them. Why don't we say also chizuk l'dvarim? Why don't we say we strengthen our chash that maybe one of them is really an Am Haaretz and didn't take Shumas and Meisers? Why would Rabbi Yehuda believe them? So, right, so as opposed to over here, we do make a chizuk l'dvarim. So we see it's not really so true. It's not an automatic, over-encompassing rule that the Chazal, just because it's the Rabbanon, they automatically make a big chizuk. So Amar Abaya, says, yeah, the major distinction is as follows. Vadei divrayhem of the Rabbanon Chizik. Safek to divrayhem loy of the Rabbanon Chizik. It depends on the scenario. Whether it's a real problem versus a questionable problem. See, over here by Ksuba, this is a real problem. We know that the rule is that you have to give 200 tzuz. And she is saying, you don't have to. So she's going against a definite. There's a definite rule, and she's going against that definite rule. Here, as opposed to in the case of the donkey drivers, where what's the issue over here? The issue is it's only a question in the first place, whether or not we trust them. What's the issue here? Maybe he really didn't take Trumas and Meisters, and they're playing this game to make it look like they took Trumas and Meisters. But then again, they could be playing this game, but it could be the reality is he anyway took the Trumas and Meisters. Right. So it's not a real issue. It's a created issue. So for created issues in the first place, to go ahead and make a chizik on top of a suffix on top of a suffix and a chizik on top of a suffix, that already we don't do. So Abai is saying that it's really we do make a chizik for the Rabbanans. We do have extra importance to a din derabbanan. However, that din derabbanan has to be something that we are really concerned about, not something that potentially concerned about. That's a bias. Teretz Rava gives a similar teretz, and it says Rava Amar B'Demaya Kilu. That no, it's not a. It's really again. Really, it should apply over here also. We should make a chizik. It should be. Except by Demai in the first place, it's a suffix in the first place, since, as Rashi says, Roy Bamaratzim are Meister in Hain. Most of them do it anyway. It's only a chashash that maybe. So it's a special cool over here. It's no reason to go over the top and make extra chumras on top of chumras for something which is not something that we're really overly concerned with in the first place. We are concerned somewhat, and we do have rules about Demai, but to go ahead and make extra credit type of gezeiros and rules on something that we're not terribly worried about is something that we don't have to go crazy. So therefore, by Demai Akilu. So both according to Abaya and Rava, Abaya says again over here it's not something that it's not a definite issue, and Rava says it's specific to this one that we don't care. But certainly we all agree that there is a concept of chizuk l'divrayim, which means that for our purposes and our sugya, that's why Rabbi Yehuda in our Gemara says we're not going to allow her just as a general tanai, as a stam tanai, to undo a ksuba. If she wants to write a contract that she received part of the ksuba, that we can't stop. You have a contract now that says I received. There's nothing we can do about that. So then she, well, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda Shita, that'll work according to Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Now don't forget the Tanna Kamma, and the way we generally hold is that even according to Rabbi Meir Shita, who argues on Rabbi Yehuda, says we don't even allow the contract. It's not, forget about the concept of whether it's a Tanai or a contract. We don't allow anything less than a full amount of the Ksuba, which is the next line, which is what the Gemara now focuses on. Right? The next quote of the Mishnah is, now anybody who tries to reduce the amount of the obligation of the Ksuba, We call it znus. We don't like this concept. Chazal had a reason for making the ksuba what it is, and that's what has to stay. No playing games. But the Gemara says it's a very interesting lashon that Reb Meir says. Reb Meir says kol ha-poiches. Reb Meir doesn't say that if she collects less than 200. He says, if you try to reduce, Reb Meir takes an initial stage. He's not concerned about what the payout is. Reb Meir is not saying that if you paid out less. Reb Meir is focused on what you tried to contractually do. So the Gemara is medayek, kol ha-poiches afilu b'tanai. So even if you try to reduce it with a simple tanai, that you didn't even, it didn't work, but you tried, that is itself the problem. Alma kosover, so that must mean that we understand the Reb Meir to say tanai bottom. Your attempt is already the problem. Even if your attempt didn't work, the tanai is bottom. The isla, and she is ultimately going to receive the full amount. It's still a problem. Why? The kivon de omar lo less loich elamana, and once he says to her, well, you're only going to collect 100 as opposed to 200, the problem is loisam chadaita. So then she doesn't trust the fact that she's going to get the full amount. Because she thinks in her mind she's going to get less than what she deserves. The havale bi'ilos, bi'ilos or bi'ilos nos. And that already makes it, she feels like she's not a full wife, and therefore it makes it like a bi'ilos znos. Okay, just the mere fact that she thinks that it might be less, even though in reality she's going to get it ultimately, she's going to get the full amount, that's enough to make it into the category of znos, according to Reb Meir. So I understand. What's the problem? Why is this an issue? According to Reb Meir, it says anytime you try to go against, this is the opposite of Reb Yehuda. Anytime you try to go against what the Torah says expressly, your tanai is meaningless. It's nothing. So why is she having such an issue with this? According to Reb Meir, your conditions and your games that you're trying to play with have no validity whatsoever. So why is Reb Yehuda concerned with this? So the Gemara answers, Harba de Rabbanon, Tanai Kayim. Oh, but just the opposite. If it's only a Din de Rabbanon, then according to Reb Meir, it should not be a problem at all. So you could make a Tanai. Why are you telling me that Reb Meir says that she doesn't know? The answer is, well, if it's only a Din de Rabbanon, this is actually what she's going to get. It's not an if. This is what she's actually going to get. So there's no misunderstanding. So here, the Gemara says an interesting machleika, kusava Reb Meir, ksuba de araisa. Remember on Amud Aleph, we said Rabbi Yehuda, who argues on Reb Meir, he held that the ksuba is the Rabbanon, and therefore chizik. They made a chizik. Here, Reb Meir says just the opposite. He holds the din of a ksuba is a din de araisa. So since it's a din de araisa, there's no playing around with it. And that's why Reb Meir is so adamant that even if you make her think that she might be getting less, or that already is a problem. You cannot change what the Din D'Araisa is. It has to be Mekayim. And even if she thinks that it's less, that's already a problem and it's going to be considered a B'ilos. Okay, so that's the basic machlekes between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, whether Ksubas D'Araisa or Ksubas D'Rabbanan.
So this is the
Raisa. Gemara takes it one step further. Tanya, we have a Braisa that takes off from where we left off with Shitas Reb Meir. Tanya Reb Meir says, Kol HaPoichas L'Basulim M'Masayim. Anybody who makes for a basula get less than 200 alamana, and for an almana less than 100, harezu bila znos. So far that's the same. That's therefore considered the equivalent of znos. Comes along the Bryce and adds a new shita. Rabbi Yosi Yomer, Rishai, you're allowed to. You're allowed to do whatever you want. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Roitza Kaisa, this is the same Shita. So we have it, we added it, we inserted a new Shita here, Rabbi Yosi Shita, that we never quoted before. It's only quoted in this price. So, and Rabbi Yehuda is the same as the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Roitza Kaisa, the Basula Shtar Shomasayim. I'll write a Ksuba of 200, Vihikos Seves, remember the, here the word Kaisa means literally shall write, Shikos Seves, Layskabalti Mimchamona. I already received 100. Ula amana mano. You have to write your original ksuba for 100 for an amana. V'hikoseves la yiskabalti mimcha chamishim. And she'll respond back. Chamishim says, and she'll respond back that I will. It's as if I received 50. Okay. So that's again the shita. The machlekes Ramei and Rabbi Yehuda we're already familiar with from our Mishnah. The added shita here is shita Rabbi Yosi. So the Gemara focuses on Rabbi Yosi shita. Basaver Rabbi Yosi Rishai. So you're going to tell me that according to Rabbi Yosi, it is okay to make a Tanai, right? Even by Peh. But Rishai means you can do whatever you want. I could reduce it in any way I want. Even by Peh, I can make a Tanai, and it'll work to reduce the Ksuba of Raminu. Ramini, I ask you a contradiction. It says, Eino Yisun Ksubas Isha Metaltalin. Okay, so you have to read the whole Brisa and the explanation to the Brisa before we get to the question. But this is the Brisa. The Brisa says as follows. Eino Yisun Ksubas Isha Metaltalin. You're not allowed to set a ksuba to be paid specifically from a metaltalin movable object. Because as we know, the basics really is generally that a ksuba gets paid from karka. That is the basics. But now you want to say, listen, I'm going to help you out here. I'm going to give you metaltalin also. I'm going to set for you certain metaltalin, certain objects that you could use from which to pay the ksuba, but we don't allow that. Okay, that's what Tanakamashita is. Bipnei tikkun olam, it's a tikkun olam. Now, what's the problem over here? Because those metaltalin may not last. This marriage, let's call a car, for example, metaltalin. The marriage might last 20 years. Cars don't last that long, you know, generally. So it's not a fair deal to say you'll get these metaltalin, because who says these metaltalin will be around? Okay, but let's be more precise. Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yosi, comments, and it says, "V'chi ma tikkun ha'olam yesh bezu." What kind of helpful? How helpful is this takana? V'haloi ein koitzvin, ein ktuvin. The metaltalin don't really have a set price. Upoichsin, and they become less. So Rabbi Yosi is concerned that if I promise you a objects are very volatile. They change prices. They go up. They go down. Who says you're going to end up getting, even if this object is around, who says it's going to have the value of a full ksuba? Fine. That's the quote of the Brisa. Now the Gemara is going to explain it. Remember, we're not going to get to the Kasha until we get through the explanation. The problem is, Tanakama Nami, Eino Yisinkov. Tanakama also agreed to Rabbi Yosi. He also says you can't. So what exactly are the Tanakama and Rabbi Yosi arguing about? They both don't like it. The Tanakama says, don't do it. And the Rabbi Yosi says, this is a terrible takana. Yeah, we agree. This is a bad idea to use metaltalin. So what are they arguing about? El alav. So the Gemara says, okay, there is a machlekes over here. El alav hachi kamar. What they meant to say is like this. When did we say that I don't allow you to use metaltalin as collateral for the ksuba? When I don't accept achrayis, when I don't say to you, when if there's anything... If it's not the full amount, I'll make it up to you with somewhere else. But if I take achrayis for it, then you could do it. Now, achrayis in this context, you have to understand, as Rashi explains, you have to understand that what it means is that if the metaltalin doesn't exist, if the object no longer exists, it's completely destroyed, it's now, it's for whatever reason, again, movable items don't last forever. So, it doesn't exist. So, and if I say to you, listen, if it's not around anymore, don't worry, I'll take care of you from someplace else. But that implies that if the object is around, the expectation is that that object will be considered payment for the ksuba. Therefore, ba'osu Rabbi Yosi l'meimer, so Rabbi Yosi comes and says, ki kibo olav achrayis amai oisin. I don't understand. Why is that okay, even if he does accept achrayis for when it's not around? V'haloi ein ksuvin upoichsin. But what I am concerned about is that even if the object is around, it's not going to be worth what it was originally worth. When he promised it to her 20 years ago, that object was the full 200 zuz. But now, 20 years later, that object doesn't have that value. So why is that okay? Okay. All right. Now, this is... So now we understand Rabbi Yosi's shita, Rabbi Yosi's concern. Rav Yossi is concerned that you cannot make an arrangement so that she ends up with less than full amount. Okay, well, if that's Rav Yossi's opinion on the matter, that contradicts Rav Yossi in our Mishnah. Because Rav Yossi in our Mishnah's whole point was that I could, if I want to, I could make arrangements with her so that I pay less than the full amount of the ksuba. If Rav Yossi in our Mishnah was not concerned about paying the full amount of the ksuba in the first place, then what does he care about the metaltalin that they go down in value? Make up your mind. Are you insisting that she get the full amount, or you don't care that she gets the full amount? Hashta. Okay, as the Gemara itself asks the question in these words. Hashta umahos and the dilma pechsi. That over there, in the case where the metaltalin, maybe it'll go down. Chayish Rav Yossi, and there Rav Yossi was all worked up and concerned about it. Hocham devade kapachsa like Kol Shekain. Over here, where she's just like outright saying, "Pay me half," so she's for sure losing value in her ksuba. And over here, he's not concerned. Like where it's a maybe, there Rav Yossi cares, but when it's a definite, then he doesn't care. That doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara says, you know, actually it does make sense. Hachi Ashta. That's exactly the difference. Hosam lo yoda de techel. Over there, she doesn't expect it to lose value. So she doesn't know what she's being meichel. So she thinks she's getting the full amount, and then all of a sudden, we turn around and she's getting less. That she never agreed to. She wanted her full amount. Hacha yoda de kamachlo. Over here, she knew well. She knew exactly what she was doing. She knew she was negotiating to get less than her folks uba. So then she outright agreed to take less. If she outright agreed to take less, then that's her prerogative. She can decide and choose to take less than the full amount. And that's why it's okay. So as long as Rav Yossi, the way he sees it, it's not a matter of insisting on getting the full amount. It's a matter of insisting that she knows what she's getting. If she doesn't know what she's getting, then you can't trick her into taking less. If she knows and readily agrees to take less than the full amount, that's fine. She can agree to take less. I don't have a problem with that. Now, again, if you hold like Rav Meir Shiti, you can never have anything less than the full amount. There's nothing to talk about. But once you're going along the lines of thinking that you could reduce the ksuba if you want to, it could only be a reduction in a way where she knows what she's getting, where she can actually be meichel an amount. But what she doesn't know when she's getting, and she's getting tricked into taking less, that she would never agree to, and that's not considered a fair payment. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll pick up with the next line, the last line, next time.